The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
How are you? How are you?
Good evening, everybody. My name is Joseph Shumtov. I am proud to be a librarian here for the Free Library of Philadelphia. Before we begin, I just have a couple of announcements to make. First, if you can please refrain from flash photography, that would be great. And you are not allowed to record the event. No recording is allowed. Also, very important, please silence your cell phones if you haven't already. Books are for sale in the lobby. It's a great book, just finished reading it. Bernie Perrant will be signing books only in the lobby after the event. If you are online and you're not holding a book, we will be asking you to move to the back of the line. So we want to get those people who want their book signed first. Let me introduce to you our guests. Stan Hockman has been covering sports for the Philadelphia Daily News since 1959. He has also worked in radio on WCAU and WIP and television for 3 years as the weekend sports anchor for WPVI-TV. It would take a long time to list all the awards Stan has received, but they include 4 Red Smith trophies, the Nat Fleischer Memorial Award, the National Headliner Award, and 3 Pennsylvania Sports Writer of the Year Awards. 2002, he was inducted into the Philadelphia Jewish Sports Hall of Fame, and in 2008, he was inducted into the Philadelphia Sports Hall of Fame. Unmasked is his 3rd book. Now for Bernie. He is a member of the NHL Hall of Fame, as you all know. With the Philadelphia Flyers, Perrant won 2 Stanley Cups, 2 Conn Smythe trophies, 2 Vezina trophies. Yeah, I know, it's amazing. When Perrant was at his best, he was the best goaltender in the NHL and arguably one of the greatest ever to play. I know I grew up in Montreal, and we didn't exactly love the Flyers. But we never had a bad word to say against Bernie Perrant. I mean, you couldn't. He was just one of the best. So it was my great pleasure to introduce Mr. Hockman and Mr. Perrant. Let's.
Thank you. The only item he left out was my appearance in Rocky V. Perhaps you remember that. Let's face it, he fought a fighter with so much glass in his jaw, he ought to be a chandelier. Of course, that's not the way I wrote it. The way I wrote it was he had so much glass in his jaw, he tinkled when he walked. But Stallone didn't like that and asked me to change it, and I told him it was his movie. My wife Gloria is in the audience. She's the only person in the room that came to see me. And that's all right. Everybody else has come to see this Hall of Fame goalie and a good friend and the subject of this book. You know, Bobby Clark was kind enough to write, I guess Robert Clark, huh? In case he's checking, Bernie. Robert Clark, not Bobby Clark.
Yeah, Robert.
Robert,
yes.
Robert Earl Clark wrote the foreword. And it's interesting because Bernie would stop 34 out of 35 shots, and the Flyers would win 2-1. And they led the league in penalty minutes. Both years they won the cup, and which meant which meant that Bernie faced a lot of shorthand situations. He'd come in, he'd unlace his skates, be surrounded by writers, including me, and he would look up and say, "Some fun, eh?" Bernie is now going to tell you that that wasn't even his line. Bernie, tell these kind folks how "Some fun, eh?" originated.
Well, I think it came from you, Stan.
Uh-huh.
It's a good question. I just want to tell the people that it's been such a wonderful journey, you know, in my life, and to end it up in Philly. Because when I started, I was 17. And I got drafted. I was living in Montreal at the time, and I got drafted by the Boston Bruins. And man, you're talking with, like I said, we only had six teams in the league, and you know, celebrations, you know, went on for the whole summer. And then when September came, I had to go to Niagara Falls, Ontario, because that's where the farm team was for the Bruins. Well, I couldn't speak English. I had to leave the safety of my family, and I had to, you know, pick up my suitcase, got on the train, and I went to Niagara Falls. And you know, it was scary, you know, risky, and with a lot of fear. And I asked myself the question for many, many years then. I said, why did I go to Niagara Falls? And finally I got the answer. It was because my purpose. I'm very strong on purpose. And my purpose was to play in the National Hockey League. So that's why I went. Then one step further, just one more thing here is if I would have, think about this too, you know, I see a lot of young people here in this room too, and it could apply to anybody. If I would have played it safe and stayed home, now, think about this. I would have missed out on that beautiful journey in my hockey career just by playing safe. So what I'm saying to you is a little bit of, you know, sharing a little bit with you what the book is all about. And from the beginning to where I'm at now, and Stan did a fantastic job in putting the whole thing together. Thank you.
All right. Specifically, though, the line, "Some fun, eh?" was invented by an advertising guy. Because Bernie was making so many saves that the Industrial Valley Bank decided to run a promotion. If you put in $50, deposited $50 in their bank, they would give you an orange windbreaker that said Bernie Perrant Savers Club. Only a few of them. You have one. Hang on to it. It's worth money now. More than $50, yeah. Too, if it's in good condition. Anyway, Bernie did the worst commercial ever made in the history of Philadelphia television. He will tell you that. It was so bad that when he got home, his dog bit him. What I did tell you, and yeah, you probably remember and hated it, I told him the commercial was so bad, it was good. And it was bad. But at the end, the advertising guy said, "Why don't you finish by saying some fun, eh?" And that became Bernie's signature line. And he stuck with it. Clark in the forward points out that, sure, right now, he's your slightly goofy uncle. Everybody loves Bernie for good reason. He represents two championship teams. He's funny, he's witty, he's warm, he's friendly. But when he played, he was intense. Clark remembers you breaking a stick in practice over the goal when somebody scored on you. Mm-hmm. Is he exaggerating, or were you that intense?
Well, some fun, eh? As a goalie, it's very, you feel a lot of pressure. Because, let's say, for an example, if you're forward, and you make a mistake, then you have a defenseman could bail you out. And if you're a defenseman, then the goalie could help you out. But if you make a mistake as a goalie, guess what? The red light goes on. Through the years, I believe I developed a system that I had to be very, very disciplined towards the system. And every time you stepped on the ice, it's the opposite. It wasn't fun because you step on the ice, you don't know what's going to happen. You have 17, 18,000 people watching you perform. And I really had to be very, very disciplined as far as my system was concerned. And we had a good team. You know, when I came back from Toronto, I got traded back to Philly. I knew I was going into a good team. But think about this, Stan. The first exhibition game at the Spectrum was against the Rangers. And I remember the headlines in the papers, first page. Perrant is back in town, should help the team win. Now, you know, your ego gets up there a little bit. Then I stepped on the ice, big standing ovation. I said, wow, this is going to be cool. And 10 minutes gone in the first period. 10 minutes. Think about this. Rangers that scored 8 goals against me. Yeah. And people started throwing stuff at me on the ice. And you know, Stan, I recognize a few people here tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, they can't reach the ice now. Getting a little old.
But you know, it just I shared this story because there's a lot of stories in this book. And it's because, keep this in mind, and this is very, very important. It is to me anyway, that quitting is never an option for me. Never. So, you know, things may go bad or whatever, and it went bad for me quite a few times throughout my life. But I just refuse to quit. And when you refuse to quit, a lot of good things happen to you.
Okay. All right. So I look around, too. We got a good mix of people here, some younger, some older, some with vivid memories of those 2 championship seasons. You did have a routine on game day, which included watching the 3 Stooges. Now, people, you'd have to have a long memory. The 3 Stooges, you know, Curly, Moe, Shemp, those guys. Yeah, all right.
There you go.
Now, what other rituals? I think you would take a nap on game day, right?
Yeah. This is, first of all, let's go back to the night before.
Okay.
Now, the night before, I used to spend 2-3 hours on what I should do the next game. You know, it was very, very important to go over my system on different players I would face, you know, the next night. Now, the day of the game, I believe in doing in preparation the night before. The day of the game, it's a day you should relax and enjoy yourself. So usually around 11 o'clock in the morning, you'd go for a light skate, maybe 15 minutes. Then you go home, and I had the same type of steak. I love ribeyes, by the way. You know, they're good steaks. I used to have the steak at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, 10 mushrooms.
10?
Yeah. Not 9, 11, 12, 10 mushrooms. And then I would go upstairs, and it's what the hockey players do the afternoon of the game, take a nap, rest to get ready for that the game that night. And at 4 o'clock, the 3 Stooges came on. And I believe when you're happy, you're laughing in life, good things happen to you. You know, that was my approach. So and laughing I did, you know, watching those guys. It was a lot of fun. And then I went to the game, and then once you get in the dressing room, then you become serious again and think about the game.
All right. But you weren't going to let the public out there know how intense a player you were and how intense the game was to you. Were you worried that the opposition would get the feeling that, I don't want to say scared or frightened or uneasy about the game. Were you hiding that feeling from the fans or from your teammates or from the opposition?
Trying to hide it from myself. just picture yourself. You put the equipment on and you're going to face, let's say, Montreal Canadiens. I didn't like you guys either. Yeah. No, but because you're so good, you know. But let's say your goalie, just picture this for a second. You're coming out the chute and you step on the ice and you have 18,000 people, you know, cheering and getting ready and hoping that you win the game. It's, it's a lot of pressure. You know, people say, well, that must have been nice. Like you played, you know, you live a life that you enjoy doing. And you don't enjoy while the game, before the game, and you don't really enjoy during the game because it's work. You become a performer and you have to perform on the ice. The beauty about the whole thing is when you win, there's no money that can buy that feeling. You know, that's beautiful. So you have, it's like life, you know, you have to go through a little bit of tough time. But if you persist and you don't quit and you win the game, good things happen, then the feelings are beautiful.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the team itself. There was a documentary a couple of years ago called The Broad Street Bullies, and it reignited interest in this team. They haven't won a championship since those two, so there's always been interest in that team. And Jack Chevalier, who covered hockey for the Bulletin, he first coined that phrase, Broad Street Bullies. How did you feel about, A, the nickname, and what it implied, that this was a bunch of goons that bloodied up the opposition and would beat visiting teams up and that kind of thing? How did you feel about that nickname?
Isn't it great? Let's extend a hand. Huh? Yeah, good. Dave. You know, those. There you go. Those. You know, those were the days where you speared somebody and you got a standing ovation, which was pretty good. But you know, and you're right, Stan. In some ways, we had some tough players on our team because, for that prime example, this man just mentioned is the first year when we played in the playoffs against St. Louis. It was in 1967, and what happened was we played against St. Louis, and they had a real tough team, you know, and they did beat us on the ice and physically and the whole bit. So I remember Snyder banging his fist on the table and said, "This will never happen again." Okay, so that was a low point in the Flyers' history. And then they went on and changed. They brought a few players like Schultz, Kelly, and Selesky, and some of the guys, and changed the whole team. Now, having said that, I remember Phil Esposito said that you can't win just by force, National Hockey League, so you have to have talent. And we did, and you were talking about Clark earlier. Bob was the best leader ever played professional sports with. And if you look at all sports, different sports in life, whether it's basketball, football, baseball, you know, hockey, whatever sports, you have to have leaders. You have to have leadership. If you don't, you're not going to do anything. And that's what we had on our team, a lot of leaders.
All right. Did guys resent, though, that it implied you didn't have a lot of talent? You were handy with your fists, but you weren't skilled players. How much talent was on that team?
I'm very modest when I say this, but we have three players who made it to Hockey Hall of Fame on that team. So, you know, it's pretty good. So we had a good mixture. Keith, you know, by the way, Ed Snyder brought in Keith Allen as a GM, and he brought in the right people, you know, and chemistry is very, very important, too, when you're on a professional team. And we had a bunch of guys that we respect each other. We help each other. So if somebody would give you a cheap shot, that guy knew there was a price to pay for, and we protected each other. So we were a team, and that's how we won.
Yeah. All right, you mentioned three in the Hall of Fame, a significant figure in the success of that team who is not in the Hall of Fame is your coach, Freddie Shiro. Why do you think he's not in the Hall of Fame now?
I don't know. to be honest with you. I think Freddie should was the coach of the two Stanley Cup teams, and Freddie was a tremendous coach. He was 15 years ahead of his time, and I remember when we played against Boston the first year, we won the Stanley Cup. Remember Bobby Orr played for Boston, was a tremendous hockey player. In my opinion, the best hockey player ever played. And everybody would stay away from him. And Freddie did the opposite. He said, shoot the puck in his corner and hit him. And what it did was Orr was tired at the end of the game, and he was tired at the end of the series. And that's how we won the Stanley Cup.
All right.
There you go.
All right. Now Freddie was called Phantom and the Fog, and he often wandered the streets of the city when you were on the road, which wound up with an episode in Atlanta where he got mugged and had to come home and miss a playoff game. Can you finally, after all these years, tell us what really happened that night?
Next question.
Okay.
Dave, Freddie was a, when he was younger, was a boxer.
Yep.
Okay. And very good boxers for that matter. And matter of fact, and Freddie was one of those, he was one of the team too, And of course, the difference is the players would go someplace, and we had a rule. And if players were someplace, then Freddie had to go a different place. Uh-huh. If Freddie was there first, then we had to go to a different place. So Freddie was almost by himself most of the time. And whatever happened, we never did find out whatever happened. It's just that knowing Freddie, I'm sure that probably somebody said something about his team, and as a good flyer, he tried to defend this team. Yep.
I'm really pleased that Larry Merchant is in the audience now. Larry hired me 53 years ago. I was in San Bernardino, California, and Larry brought me to the Philadelphia Daily News. He's still active, does commentary on fights. And he'll be doing a fight out of Atlantic City this weekend, but he wanted to spend a couple of days in Philadelphia, and I'm thrilled that he's here. And I can tell you a story about
that. Yeah. Good man.
That involves Larry. There he is. Larry left to go to the New York Post in about 66 or 67, and when the Broad Street Bullies were competing for a Stanley Cup, Larry wrote a column about Dave Schultz, comparing him to a trained dog, and that you unleash him and he would attack. A Doberman, I think. Well, all right. To Schultz, all sports writers look alike. The next day, they're at practice. I'm standing in the penalty box. Back in the day, they let us be close to watch practice. Here comes Schultz, skates over to me. With the business end of his stick, he makes a figure eight 2 inches from my nose. He thinks I'm Larry. I'm so shocked that I don't even blink, which the other players thought I was courageous. Actually, I was just startled. I couldn't imagine why Schultz was angry at me. Mm-hmm. You tell us, Bernie, how do you think Schultz felt about having the role of enforcer on this team, of the fighter?
He loved it.
He loved it.
Yeah. He did. He did. He loved it. Dave, if you look different fighters, National Hockey League, they'll fight, they'll get going, then that's it, it's all over. Dave had charisma. Yeah. He did. If you look at the films, when Dave fought, he had charisma. He would bring the crowd. First of all, the crowd. I remember going on the road, and you get to a city, and you have your front page of a newspaper. K keep your kids and your wives inside of the house. The flyers are in town, you know. And it happened quite a few times. But when we had charisma on our team, and then Dave really did. And I would watch him perform, and it just, there was a beauty to it. I loved it. Yeah.
All right, Bernie. The parade was spectacular. You win the championship, and there's a parade down Broad Street, right?
Yep.
In the book, you tell about a previous parade when the team first came to town. When did you tell that now?
Well, that was in 1967. And first of all, there were only six teams in the league, okay? And I had played for the Boston Bruins. And I was living in Montreal at that time, so I received a phone call from my friend and said, hey, guess what? You just got drafted by Philadelphia. I said, really? I said, where's Philadelphia? I said, I had no clue. So anyway, so they introduced us to the city. Think about this, right? And they put us on the float. We're going through Broad Street. There's about 10 people showed up. And that was a short parade. And the reason...
One guy was looking for work, I think. One of those 10 people was just applying for a job.
But the reason I'm sharing this is because, think about this, this is a heck of a story. 7 years later, only 7 years later, we won the championship, and we had over 2 million people. Isn't that cool? Yep.
All right, so they haven't won one since. I mean, these people are aware of history. You won back-to-back championships, and they haven't won a Stanley Cup since. They've been searching not to butter you up because you are a Hall of Fame goalie, and you pitched 12 shutouts one season, came right back and had 12 shutouts the next season. They've been looking for a dominant goalie ever since. And now they have spent a lot of rubles on Ilya Bryzgalov. Is he the answer?
Boy, that's a heck of a question.
Well, I figured, I'm anticipating. Folks, in about 5 minutes, we're going to end this conversation and throw it open to questions from the audience. So be thinking about what you want to ask Bernie. But I anticipate that was one of the questions you would want to ask, Bernie.
Yeah, he is what you call, he has God-given talent. Okay, very, very important. Once you have that, then you can always work with the individual and improve. Where is that? And I'll come back to this in a second. I just want to share a story with you. When I got traded from the Flyers to Toronto, my career was going in circle. Nothing was happening, you know. And people were asking a lot of questions. Where is he going? Where is he with his career? You know, I wasn't playing that well. Then I ended up with Jacques Plante, who used to be the goaltender for Montreal Canadiens for a lot of years. And I would watch him play because we split the games there. I watch him play, and I said, wow, what a goaltender, you know. And one day I asked him, I said, can you teach me your knowledge? He said, of course. Because Plante at the time was 42 years old. And he did. And that changed my whole career. So you know, now going back to our goalie, Ken, he's a good goalie. You know, he's a very good goalie. It's just that there's a couple little things that it has to work on, and once it gets going. And don't forget, he came from Phoenix, and I said this before, guy loses 4-2, man, you had a good game. You know, you only had four goals against you. Yeah, you come to Philly, then it's different, you know. In Philly, you want to win the game.
In Philly, you know, there are more reporters in the locker room.
yeah, sure.
All right.
And you know, so it was a big adjustment he had to make, and it's difficult for him to communicate with people, just like it was for me at the beginning of my career. So So you got to give him some time, but I think you'll see this year. He has a lot of potential.
All right, I'm going to wind up my portion of this by asking you about Rexies. Anybody recognize the name Rexies? Ah, we got some old timers in the back. Rexies was a tavern in New Jersey.
Well, not a tavern.
Not
it
a
was
tavern.
A little bit higher scale than that, yeah.
A higher scale than
they
that?
They had
it
food.
Had sawdust on the floor.
They had food, for God's sakes.
Yeah, they had food if you liked a hamburger or a cheeseburger. All right, so what did... Rexies, I have to tell you, the Rexies burned down. The list of suspects starts with the players' wives. But they wore a patch on the uniform to commemorate Rexies. That's how they felt about it. So what part did Rexies play in the morale of this team?
Well, first of all, it was so sad when it burned down. It was good. It was good because Clarkie became a good friend with the owner of Rexies. And then we ended up, so we had a rule. We had a meeting, closed-door meeting among the players, and we had a rule that everybody had to stop there for one beer. Yeah. And in those days, you have to remember, now, players today are making 5, 6, 8, 10 million a year. When I played for Toronto, I was making 25,000. Wow. And then people say, how much money did you save, right? But anyway, Rexy, but going back to Rexy's, the reason I'm saying this about the money is because we didn't make that much money. Of course, it was more than 25, but we didn't make that much money. And all we did was, it was a build-up towards the Stanley Cup because we're constantly talking about the Stanley Cup. And that's what we did all the time. Sometimes it would last a couple of hours, but we were pumped. And guess what, folks? You don't always get what you want in life, but you always get what you attract. And that's what we were talking about all the time, the Stanley Cup, and finally did it. So it became a very important place for us.
Okay, good. All right, now here's the way we're going to work it. There are people with microphones right here. If you raise your hand, they'll come by, speak loud and clear so that the rest of the audience can hear the question, and then Bernie will answer it. Okay. Gentleman on the aisle right there.
Bernie, the year you came back from the trade, when you said you gave up the 8 golds, the first game was Toronto against Philadelphia. At home, they had Kate Smith. Doug Favell against Bernie Parent. You just won the game 2-0. Second game, you had a shutout. Third game, we beat Detroit 12-2, whatever. But then we won the cup. And I remember during the national anthem, Phil Esposito hands Kate Smith roses. And I think the greatest save I've ever seen made was against Bobby Schmatz, 7.5 minutes, the right faceoff shot. And you made the kick save because with 8 minutes left, I was soaked. My heart was pounding. And I'm like, I couldn't see the shots go on gold anymore. Like,
well, thanks.
Well, that wasn't quite a question, was it?
No.
That was more of a memory, down memory lane.
You know what? I could listen to him all night, man.
But, take all the time.
By the way, I know. By the way, the mistake I made on that shot, I think it was more like about 4 minutes left in the game. The mistake I made is, I should have showed them some confidence. Yeah. I should have kicked it back to them and say, try again. Yep.
Bernie, let's try another one. Then this gentleman right there.
Thank you. Good evening, Bernie. Thank you for coming. I just got to tell you, I'm really a major fan. I'm not even a major sports fan. You are my only sports hero. And I've been talking to my girlfriend. I've been telling her for years, I've got to meet Bernie Parent one day. So I'm very excited that you're here.
Thank you.
I got very emotional when the Spectrum was taken down. I got emotional when JFK was taken down. I got emotional when that stadium was taken down. But I'm curious, as a player, did you become attached to places like that? And did it have an effect on you when it came down?
Yeah, of course. You know, of course, because, the memories are just incredible. But you have to... the way I look at life, you know, you don't lose anything. You know, it's very, very important to understand, for me anyway, you don't lose anything. You just go through a phase, and then you move on to a different phase. And you're grateful that that phase was very successful, and then you move on to the next phase and hope that it's going to be just as successful. You don't forget, of course, you know, because the Spectrum was so special. You know, and you could build all sorts of buildings now. It will never duplicate the Spectrum. It was just awesome. And I had the chance, which it was very powerful, and I had a chance, Stan, just before they knocked the building down, to step exactly where the goal was. And when Gene Hart said the Flyers are going to win the Stanley Cup, and I stood there for about 10 minutes, and I could actually hear the crowd and Gene, that was just what a wonderful moment. So I will never forget that. Yeah.
All right. In case you haven't been down there, the Spectrum has been replaced by something called Xfinity Live, a collection of sports bars and that kind of thing. And, Bernie, do you want to confirm or squelch the rumor that there will soon be a 12-foot-high statue of you and Clark holding the Stanley Cup?
Yeah, supposed to. Thank you. It's in the near future, hopefully, you know, and the time has to be right to do this. But think about this. Your little kid in Montreal, living, you're 5-6 years old, you watch Montreal Canadiens play all the time. You dream about being a hockey player in the National Hockey League, and then you get an award like this in Philadelphia. Come on. You know? You're right. You can't beat it. That's pretty good.
And number retired and a couple others. Yes, sir.
Yes.
Bernie, I'd like you to talk about what was the feeling like in the locker room at Citizens Bank Park before you walked in front of like 70,000 people.
Oh, well, the Winter Classic last year was incredible. And, you know, I'm 66 years old, and my good friend sitting here, Dean Smith, who has successful business and is also my business manager, finally convinced me to play the game. I said, all right, first time in 35 years, okay? I'm 66 years old. So the toughest part, by the way, was to remember how to put the equipment on. Yeah. But I practiced, you know, I had about 6-7 times we practice, and then think about this. We're sitting in the dressing room, and we had, by the way, the Flyers did a beautiful job on this. We had 5 different generations of players in the dressing room. Tockett, you know, Markow and Lindros and all those guys. And we're talking, we're having fun, you know, it's an alumni game. And somebody knocked at the door 5 minutes before the game and said, you have 5 minutes to go. And the whole place got quiet. Think about this. And we all look at each other. And we reviewed somehow, I did, I think the guys did too, reviews, you know, the games that we played for the Flyers in our prime, each one of us, you know. What a wonderful time that was. You know, the magic was incredible. And then, same guy knocked at the door again, and then we had to go on the ice. Wow. You stepped on the ice, you have 45,000 people. Come on. You're talking about being nervous in life. It was a fear, you know, risk and fear, because the first time I played in goal in 35 years, it was scary. But I knew I was going to just play 5 minutes, just 5 minutes. And they dropped the puck, and I watched the clock. Then there was a face-off. I said, thank you, Lord. They dropped the puck again, and I watched the clock again. And the clock kept going so slow. But, you know? And finally, I made a couple of saves, and one was on the rebound. You know, how I got up, I have no clue. And then the magic of Duguay coming down on the breakaway. And I said, Lord, it's been 35 years. Give me a break. You know? And he did, because Duguay was such a classy guy. He shot them, he hit my pads, and then everybody was happy. Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Just, isn't that awesome? What a...
That's Bernie being humble, but that's okay. That's okay. All right, gentlemen.
Hi, I had a comment first and a question.
Yeah.
I was a lowly undergraduate in 1974 at the University of Pennsylvania, and I think people who aren't here at the time or just forget can't imagine how big it was when the Flyers won the Stanley Cup. I was at the parade. It was just a magic day. The Eagles had Pete Lisk. He couldn't throw a forward pass. We had season tickets. We don't know why we went, because we left in the third quarter. The Phillies, other than Steve Carlton, were horrendous. And the Sixers, during a few years before you won the Cup, you know, won all of 9 games. Mm-hmm. So it was just magic. It was almost Rocky-esque before there was a Rocky, you know, a few years before. So it just, and it started, you know, in 1980, all the teams were in the finals. The Phillies finally broke their 97-year curse of never winning a World Series. So it was just such a big deal, and I thank you with all my heart for that. The question is, I'm not into negotiations or labor unions, but of course hockey, who lost the season already, is on strike. I read, as just a passerbyer, you know, they hired Donald Fair because he gave the players a really good deal with baseball, and the players feel they got ripped off when they lost the whole season. They want a better deal. You know, I think everybody loses. As you said a few minutes ago, you know, the prices already, well, you didn't say that, but the prices to go to a game are pretty high, and the players are making buco bucks, unlike your day. So I just wonder your feelings about the strike and any suggestions how we can have a more permanent settlement. Thank you.
Thank you for your kind words. As far as your question, I'm in the dark, just like you guys are, you know, because I'm not involved in those meetings. But one thing I know for sure is it's very difficult on the fans, very difficult on the owners, very difficult on the players. And for an example, we went to Xfinity tonight to grab a sandwich before we came here. And it's very quiet. You know, there's not much happening. So there's a lot of people affected with this. You know, a lot of people, not just the players, owners, you know, the fans, the people working, you know, those places. And it's affecting a lot of people. And, you know, those people, they're smart people. You know, they're negotiating, they're smart. And think about this. 7 years ago, the league grossed $1.4 billion. Not million now, billion. Last year, they grossed $3.4 billion. You know, and, you know, you look at the whole picture, it's a lot of money. There's a lot of cities involved, a lot of teams, you know, a lot of teams involved, a lot of players. They know the situation is, and I hope, you know, I pray that the game comes back soon, because I don't know about you guys, but I miss it. I really do.
Okay.
Thanks.
I just not to be nitpicking, but it's not really a strike. It's a lockout. There's a significant difference. The owners have locked out the players. It's not that the players went out with picket signs. Yes, sir.
Mr. Hockman, my father loved you. He thought you were the greatest writer in the world.
Wow.
You actually interviewed him one time with Pete, went something about Pete Retzlaff. I still have the article. My question is, Bernie, though, I used to be Chuck Batnerick's mailman, and Chuck was a great guy. He still is a great guy, but he was very bitter about that he missed the big money, you know, that he was a great player, and they got paid $14,000 a year, and people, you know, now were getting paid tons of money. Do you have any feelings on? I mean, I know you weren't as well paid as the current guys are. Do you have any feelings on that?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
And you know, when you're grateful in life, gratefulness is very, very important. And I feel today doesn't matter where you're at in your life, if somebody's making $100 million a year, and whatever you're making, as long as you're grateful with what you have. Think about this, for example. You stood up, you're healthy, yeah? And I'm sure there are some people in the hospital that right now are worth $50, $100 million and dying, and they would share everything to be in your position to be healthy. Yeah. So, you know, even just the air we're breathing, you know, be grateful for. I took this attitude of being grateful for what I have. And when you're grateful for what you have, more grateful things will come to you. You know, it's awesome. Yeah.
Terrific. You'll notice that Bernie is not wearing a tie. Bernie hates ties because a tie means a shootout, and he hates shootouts even more. That's a goal. All right, down in the first row.
A question about Freddie Shiro. I remember reading somewhere that he had a bulletin board with 3x5 cards that gave you guys a lot of advice. And as I recall, I have a hard time recalling that far back, but I recall a card that I've never forgotten. It said, take a direct route to the puck and arrive with a feeling of hostility. Mm. Did you get a lot of other good advice like that on the bulletin board?
Oh, yeah. We had some every game, every practice. But, you know, the one, think about this. I think everybody could relate to this one. When he wrote on the blackboard before the game we won the Stanley Cup, the first Stanley Cup against the Bruins, when he wrote down, we win tonight, we walk together forever. Remember that?
Yeah.
And you know, at the time, I said, wow, this is cool, you know? And because you're thinking about the team. And, you know, it's been almost 40 years since we won the Cup. And you know what? This could apply to the whole city of Philadelphia, or the Delaware Valley for that matter. Because the whole city, the whole Delaware Valley, we've been walking together forever.
Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
All right. The gentleman in the Flyers shirt.
I've been a Flyers fan since I was born. My dad told me a lot about you. Question is, Schneider, is he a good owner? I've heard owners of other teams are not as good as he is. I heard that he paid for some colleges for kids that players played for him, and I'm glad that you played for the Flyers, and I'm glad you played in the Winter Classic also. Only the alumni game, but now when Rescue's burned down, I heard Dave the Hammer Schultz cried when it burned down. Was that really true?
What's your next question?
Yeah.
That is my question. Was that really true when he cried that day? When it burned down.
Well, Ed Snyder is a terrific owner.
And go ahead.
Well, yeah. I was just going to say that if you've been following in the newspapers, he has paid out of his own bank account to rehabilitate at least 4 rundown hockey rinks so that kids can play hockey. He's put roofs on the structure, and I will tell you how difficult it is to get something done in the city. I've been fighting the good fight to get a statue of Joe Frazier created and on display somewhere. We're still fighting the good fight. But Ed Snyder takes things into his own hands and rehabs these hockey rinks and helps junior hockey. Let's take one more question in the middle. That gentleman with the sunglasses.
Young lady. All right. We'll have one more here, too.
One more after this. All right.
Hello. Good evening. Mr. Perrant, I have one question for you. Was your intentions when you started your hockey career to end up into the Hall of Fame? And is it true that Bobby Clark likes to eat pucks for breakfast?
Well, you know, your purpose, your goal really as a kid is to perform in the National Hockey League. I mean, I don't think at the time I knew what the Hall of Fame was all about, you know, and I've talked to a lot of people about this individual awards, like Stan had mentioned, the Conn Smythe, the Vezina Trophy, you know, the Hall of Fame. Those are individual awards. They're nice to have, but you know what? they don't even come close to the Stanley Cup. Because, you know, okay, so let's say I won the Conn Smythe, right? And you don't do this by yourself. You know, it's a team. It's a team effort. You know, it just happened that they love the goalie that year. But, you know, you can't. So, yes, they're nice to have. But the Stanley Cup, baby, you got to work as a team.
All right. In this setting, Bernie allows a woman to have the last word.
Here you go.
I better make
Please
it a good
be
one.
Be a good question.
Well, it's actually a quick comment and just a simple question. I guess my comment is just to let you know that I'm a hockey fan and I was raised in a hockey town, but it wasn't this one. It was Boston. And in 1974, I know, and in 1974, of course, everybody was watching Game 6. And I just have such a memory of that game and knowing that nothing was going to get by you. And just really, you know, knowing I had absolutely no respect for any other Flyer except you. Mm-hmm. So I'm very pleased to be able to tell you that. I also liked, you know, one other player that wasn't a Boston, and it was Guy Lafleur. So, you know, you think about...
How about that? Two Frenchmen.
Two Frenchmen. That just goes to tell you. And I guess my question has nothing to do with the book and the stories you've been telling, but it seems like... where you are in your life, you have such gratitude, and it seems like you talk about transitions and self-awareness. And I'm just wondering, you know, could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, of course. There was a time in life where my purpose, my goals were mostly with material things, you know, which, by the way, we all know that they come and go. You know, just that's the way life is. You know, but how you approach life is, to me, it's so important to, like I said, be grateful. And, you know, and little things, for example, you know, like, as I mentioned, it's worth repeating, you know, you don't always get what you want. Think about this, but you always get what you attract. So what is it that you're attracting? You know, ask yourself the question, you know, if things aren't going good one day or whatever, then you ask yourself, what am I thinking about? And you have the power to change that, to something else, and then good things start to happen again, because that's what you're attracting in your life. You know, it's very, very important. And that's the directions, you know, I go in my life. You know, the other part too is it's so important to doesn't matter if you're 100 years old, doesn't matter if you're 10 years old, you will face risk, you will face fear, and always believe that one day you're sitting on your couch and someone knocks at the front door. You open the door, and there's nobody there but fear looking at you in the face, in the eyes. And that's when you got to turn your back on safety and security and march on. And that's when good things happen to you. And that's, to me, that's, you know, that's the way. And then, you know, I want to share, just before we move on, the story about when I was a kid. I was, I shared this with young people, and they... Typically, they'll come back and say, oh, I have enough time. You know, I have my whole life in front of me. You may think you have lots of time. You may not. When I grew up in Montreal, I was, you know, by the time I was about 6, realizing what was going on around me, my grandmother was helping us to, you know, my mom to raise us. And grandmom was about 60 at the time. And, you know, to me, grandmom was always an old lady to me. But I since changed my perception of that, but at the time, that was the deal, you know. And grandmom always said to me, she said, I'll be going soon, son, I'll be going soon. And grandmom lived to be 94 years old. And one night she fell asleep. The angels came in and took her away. On the other side of the coin, remember Pelle Lindbergh? Played for us. Pelle was 26. He had imported the beautiful Porsche from Germany. Red, beautiful red Porsche. And it was a twin turbo, and Pelle loved speed. And one night, he came around the corner and miscalculated the corner, hit the wall, and died instantly. And the question here is, if you would have asked him, think about this, if you would have asked him a half hour before, how many years are you going to have, do you have left on this earth? He would have said, at least 50 years. He didn't have 30 minutes. Hey, yeah, you know, so you want to play it safe in life? Or you want to take risk? One thing we know for sure, we don't have that much time. So my advice is take the risk and go for it. If it doesn't work out, learn from it and move on. Other things will show up and you'll benefit from this. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks.
I am going to end things on a lighter note. One of my favorite stories in the book involves Bernie's backup goaltender, Bobby Taylor, the chief. And Bernie enjoyed playing because it kept him sharp. And besides, for all the intensity and the nerve-wracking anxiety, he enjoyed the games. So he had played 44 in a row, and he was neck and neck with Tony Esposito for the Vezina Trophy, which goes to the goalie with the fewest goals scored against him. And they're getting ready to play Boston. And Freddie Shiro announces that Bobby Taylor will be in goal. And the writers, being writers, immediately surround Shiro and badger him and scream at him, "Why are you playing Taylor at this point?" And Freddie had a habit of pushing the glasses on his nose back when he was stalling. And he did that, and he said, "Because it's his turn." After 44 games of Bernie. Yeah. So at this point, I want to thank you for your attention and for your questions. And Bernie will be out there to sign books, and hopefully you'll buy some and enjoy them. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.